Hello and welcome to Looking Sideways, a show about making. How we make things and how those things make us. My name's Andrew Slee, and this is the third episode in a special series coming from Shenzhen in China, the global centre of electronics manufacturing. I'm here with Lighthouse as part of the British Council's Hello Shenzhen programme. It's a cultural exchange that brings Chinese makers to the UK and British makers to China. In this episode, I spoke with Vicky Shear, who's the Global Cooperation Director of SOIL. SOIL stands for Shenzhen Open Innovation Lab. As well as running a fab lab, they help foreign companies plug into the local supply chain, helping them understand how to work with factories, component manufacturers, and designers in Shenzhen. In this conversation, we talk about open source in China, copycat products, and the way Chinese makers and manufacturers embrace the market. We start by talking about Hua Chengbei, the famed electronics market, where tiny stalls sell everything you could possibly need for an electronics product, from CPUs to LEDs, ribbon cables to machine screws. It's a fascinating place and has become an essential stopping off point on any maker's tour of Shenzhen. But more than that, it's a place that gives a glimpse of Shenzhen's unique, densely packed network of factories and suppliers, and the rapid culture of innovation the city is famed for, known as Shenzhai. This is based in part on a culture of sharing designs, known as Gongban and Gongmo. Those are designs for circuit boards and product cases, respectively. It's a networked system of sharing that's often compared to the open source ethos, but it comes from a very different culture.
When we're talking about the Shenzhen ecosystems, we have to look at the Hua Chengbei electronic market. This is a must-go paradise for makers. So what you have to know is that inside that buildings, all the booths, they're actually only 1 square meter, a little booth. But the revenue for them is about, I think it's over 150,000 per month.
So that's because the booths are selling, you're not just buying one.
Yeah, they're not retailers, they're actually wholesalers, and they stand for big factories behind them. Yeah. So normally when you go to Hua Chengbei electronic market, like you ask him for the price of some kind of specific components. Normally the first sentence they will ask is how many volume you want. So normally the minimum will be like 5K.
Yeah.
When you talk to them. But if you just tell them, if you are makers like walking around in Shenzhen, you just tell them, yeah, I would like to buy just a few units. They will say, okay, I will give you the retail price. But that will be much expensive than if you buy a big volume of that.
Do their hearts sink when they see a European-looking person walking through? They know that they're only going to buy, 5 or 10 or something.
No, actually, you can see a lot of foreigners in Hua Chengbei area. So it's kind of normal phenomenon for them to see foreigners. And also, I think the unique culture for the Hua Chengbei electronic area is more related to the white label products. The white label products with no brand.
Yeah, so for example, you can have someone make you a smartwatch or a smartphone or a baby monitor or a drone or anything you like, and it comes to you unbranded, and you can decide what color to make it, and you can tell them what brand to put on it, and then you can sell it yourself.
So we have to mention the Gongban and Gongmo here. So Gongban means the open source boards. And Gongmo means the open source case. So which means they actually open source from the factories or the manufacturer or even the designers. So everyone, if you have some ideas, you can just go to the market and find the favorite white label you want. And then you just talk to him like how much volume I want. And then I want to put my logo on it and ship it. So that can actually be shipped in just a few weeks with your own company logos. But you can also talk to the owner saying that I also want to make some revisement on it. They can also offer that kind of service. So you can, if you just you want to buy a Bluetooth speakers, but you want to add some functions of AI you can talk to him. He can tell you like how's the weather today.
Yeah.
So you can actually talk to the manufacturer or the owners saying that, yeah, I actually want to, I want this kind of appearance of this Bluetooth speakers, but I want you to make some revise on the PCB boards inside.
It seems like a very different kind of approach to product development than what we would assume in say the UK. Now, I'm not a product designer, so I don't know. I might be ill-informed, but the way I imagine it is more that you've established the problem you want to solve or the market you want to serve, and then you get your sketchbook out and start drawing pictures and then specifying components or functionality and so on. And then, you know, after you've done all that stuff, then you've got maybe a case design. You've got a 3D model, and you've got a design for a circuit board and all the rest of it. And at that point, you would then take all that very custom stuff that's all unique to you, to a manufacturer, maybe in Shenzhen or anyone else, and then ask them, you know, here's this custom thing. Can you tell me how much this would cost to make, or how manufacturable is this? But what you're talking about is something slightly different, where you're kind of almost shopping for functionality off the shelf, you know, from a menu of, you know, I want a bit of AI and a bit of Bluetooth and a bit of, you know, stereo speakers, and then I kind of put it in this case with that branding. And
so normally it's because most of the overseas startup teams members, or even some local startup teams members here, we actually receive a lot of, you know, proposals about their projects, and they're saying that, yeah, we actually have a great ideas, like we trying to solve this kind of problems, our target audience is this kind of group of people. But actually most of these kind of ideas are actually we can find existing products in the market. So that's the reason why we will like advise them or suggest them to come here to Shenzhen to walk around the Huachangbei electronic market to see whether the ideas that you are scratching in your mind is actually originally initiated in Huachangbei electronic market or already in the market. You don't have to do everything from scratch by yourself, because it's kind of waste of your time and money. This is also the most important factors for startup teams. They short for money and short for time. So what they should do is trying to find an efficient way, a quick way and low cost way to realize your first batch of your products, even though it's a small volume.
One of the things that's very visible when you're visiting these kind of markets, and I think relates to the perception of China or Chinese manufacturing in the UK, is this whole idea of copying of products. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've learned since I've been here is that there's a much more, while it certainly does happen, there certainly is copying, there are many more shades of grey than we might at first think. So there are certainly, you know, I went into some computer stores selling, you know, Apple resellers, for example, and, you know, they're selling, I would say, quite clearly fake Apple phones and laptops and so on. Mm-hmm. There are also, I'm sure, better quality fakes, and that I know that there are fakes, in inverted commas, if you like, where they're even made in the same factory, but they're just made at night time when the official line has been shut down. I don't know if that's the case for Apple products, but I know that I believe that happens for certainly some products. Mm-hmm. You know, so that those things are, well, they're kind of fakes, they're not legitimate, but then they're functionally the same. And then even things like you were talking about Bluetooth speakers and things. Mm-hmm. When you go around the market, you see, you know, hundreds of designs for example speakers. And they all look very familiar. There's a lot of variety, but a lot of them kind of play off the same design ideas. And some of them look very similar to maybe brand names that we might have heard of in the UK, like Jawbone or something, Bose or something. And it just makes me think that the sort of idea of intellectual property, of having an original design which is yours, and really is yours and really doesn't belong to someone else or isn't inspired by someone else. Mm-hmm. It's a very artificial idea that's very difficult to maintain or maybe even defend. Can you describe
what from your perspective the norm is regarding kind of copying and intellectual property in Shenzhen?
This is a big question. But normally I have to say, in Huachangbei electronic market, if you see something, some products exist in that market, that means there must be needs for it. So even though it varies in different designs or mechanical designs or appearance designs, industrial designs, then actually if someone needs it, then they have the reasons to exist in the market. So for example, like Shenzhen phones. Actually, we call this Shenzhen phone is because they look similar to some big brain phone, but they actually have different functions, right? So for example, there is actually a phone with 7 speakers.
Right.
Yeah. Who do you think will need this kind of phone?
A teenager.
No. You mean what, playing songs while they walk in the street?
Exactly. I've heard them.
Yeah. Actually, it's for the constructors in the construction area. Uh-huh. Because they work in a very noisy environment. Yes. So if someone calls them, they can actually hear that. So that kind of phone is actually designed for those workers.
Okay.
So I have to say, where there's a need, there will be this kind of products exist. So even though it's similar functions or barrel designs, but actually someone buy it, then that's the reason why they exist in the market. So in Huachangbei, I think the principle will be, if you can ship it, you can earn money from it, then you are the winner. Because ship it is the life of your products. So I think this is the principle of like people who working in Huachangbei electronic market. If these products don't sell well, they won't even put it on the table on their booth because they only have a 1 square meter booth.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why I think if those products exist in the booth, they must have a reason. So that's one of the points that we have to face in Huachangbei electronic market. So the other part will be in terms of the intellectual property, which is, I have to say, the hoverboard.
Yes.
The hoverboard, like now everyone uses it.
Is it a popular thing? I was expecting to see everyone on hoverboards here, but actually it's far more popular in the UK, I would say.
Really?
I actually see
in the morning, like the traffic jam area,
you
can see people riding the hoverboard to work office. Yeah. So actually, no one knows the original designers for hoverboard. It just appeared in Huachangbei electronic market, and it started to appear in the Amazon platform and have a very good selling volumes.
Yeah.
So, but no one knows who is the original designer for the hoverboard.
But presumably it was someone's original design.
Right?
And that person is going,
but who
damn
is
it? Why am I getting all the money from this?
But that one must have earned a lot of money for this. Right? Because he designed this one, he shipped it, and then it became popular and everyone copying that. I don't say it's copying because they actually in different design. Or in different functions.
Okay.
It's not kind of very specific copying directly the original one. But actually, I would suppose that the original designers can definitely earn a great deal of money from the hoverboard design, although there are a lot of similar products in the market.
Yeah, so there are kind of evolutionary adaptations as they go.
And people were thinking to add more functions on the original design as well. They will try to, because they also want to avoid that, the law of the property. So they will try to make some revise on it to avoid that kind of, it's kind of a gray area.
Well, this is what it comes back to. Lots of things have changed in my attitude since I've been here. But that's one of them, is that the gray area is much larger between the two extremes than it was. So the government published a policy which was called
Mass Innovation and Entrepreneurship.
And so this was a centrally planned policy, but then it actually resulted in some sort of concrete actions being taken by lots of people around the country. Mm-hmm. Is this the thing that has led to the rise of makerspaces?
Yes, I think. Because in 2014, I'm talking about the environments and phenomena in Shenzhen cities. Mm. So in 2014, the premier of China, Mr. Li Keqiang, he went to Chaihua Makerspace. Mm. So after that, we actually getting more and more makerspace setting up in the whole cities. For makerspace, they actually have a standard, you know, requirements to identify that you are a qualified, defined makerspace or maker platform or individual maker. So makerspace will be, you have a space, mm-hmm. but they have require a specific number for the space, like 500 square meters. So this is for makerspace.
Okay.
So you should have over 20 startup teams based in your space.
Okay.
Working on their projects.
So they specify the floor area and the number of people who should be using
yes.
it.
Yes. And also the kind of service you provide to teams inside your space and other very normal requirements for, like, you must be a company, registered company,
yeah.
and you have to provide the formal documents to support that you are a legal private companies.
So the 20 startup teams.
Yes.
So right there feels to me like that's one of the things that has led this word down a slightly different path to the one it means in the UK. Because, I think most people would argue that a certain amount of space and a certain number of people using the space, and maybe even a certain kind of... Mm-hmm. Things, activities that happen in the space mm-hmm. would be kind of defining features of a makerspace in the UK. But they wouldn't be that they are startup teams. They would just be that they are people making something.
Yes.
And there are some makerspaces that are commercial and maybe like have some sort of mm-hmm. Maybe incubators for hardware companies. But that isn't a given by any means. But it seems to me right there in the definition, they have to be... If you had the right floor area and the right services, but you had 20 amateur... hobbyist makers who are just kind of making cool projects, you presumably wouldn't qualify as far
yes,
as the
government. Yes, that's the reason why they need this kind of specific terms to describe their requirements. And the grants, the funding will be about 3 to 5 million RMB.
Per year?
Yes.
So roughly, to get pounds, you sort of divide by 10, so that's 300 to 500,000 pounds mm-hmm. per year.
I don't know how to...
yeah, I think that's right. My math is correct.
Yeah. But okay. Normally, makerspace will only get 3 million. That's the minimum.
Okay. That strikes me as being quite a lot of money.
Yes, but it's only once.
Ah, okay. So that's like a one-off upfront cost, like to set up or something.
Yes. They were just giving a very initial support to the setup of your makerspace, and they require no returns.
So this would explain why... there are some empty space.
Yes. Co-working space.
Ah, okay. So you could start up a makerspace, try it for a year, and then if it's not working, you could just convert it into a regular office space, co-working space or something. And, but the government has paid, or the taxpayer has paid for your... Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
We actually get the grant from the government, so I have to say this policy is great.
But
we are not a maker space. We apply for the maker platform. So the maker platform is sorry. Less strict.
Yeah. So this is the second layer
yes,
of the...
Yes, yeah. They only require that you have 300 square meters for the space mm-hmm. and less startup teams.
Okay.
In terms, yeah, it's only like 10 or 15 startup teams you have to provide your service. So obviously we did. Mm. So we are not that kind of co-working space style. So yeah, we successfully get a grant like 2 million from the government.
Okay.
For the first year when we set up.
So that helped you set up the Fab Lab.
Yes.
And get the shop bot and all the other expensive toys. So I guess I'm interested in not just the sort of technical aspects of making in Shenzhen and the infrastructure, but also the cultural aspects. And one of those is people's relationship to their jobs or to their work and how they relate their work to their identity. Mm-hmm. I've been speaking with a lot of entrepreneurs, and maybe unsurprisingly, they work very long days. Is that a more generalized thing? Do people work all the time here?
So I have to say, Shenzhen never sleep. You know, every time. Yeah, even for me, I actually work over 18 hours per day. Like, started from the time I get up.
Mm.
6:30, I get up. And then 7, I drive to work.
Mm.
And then normally we'll be arriving the lab at 9.
Mm.
And then started to work. And sometimes if we have some big events like, you know, Fab 12 or the Mass Innovation Entrepreneurship Week, it will be, it's hard to say, we will be working on the preparations till 2 or 3 a.m. At midnight. So this is actually a very normal working pattern for me.
Yeah, it sounds like you should get a bed in the office. You don't have to go home. So can I ask why this is not your company? Yeah, you are not going to get rich by, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I don't know how well paid you are, but it's not, you don't have the financial incentives of a startup. I'm guessing you enjoy your work.
Yes.
Is that a common thing? Does everyone behave like that?
I have to say, in my circle, like the people I know, they actually, it's much more like me. So actually, people have their own purpose or their own aim, so they're willing to work hard on it. I think this is kind of the sense of the responsibility for individuals. And
what do you mean by that, responsibility?
I don't know, it's like your boss gives you the assignments and you have to finish it in a perfect way. That's kind of sense of responsibility and self-satisfaction, you know. So I don't know why I'm working so hard. Every time my friends, they would just tell me, yeah, you should quit or you should have a rest because all my friends are getting married and having a baby, but I'm not. I'm still working. So sometimes they will say, yeah, why don't you just think about changing another job with more relaxed way or more easy way to finish your assignments instead of like working so hard and communicating with different people. Yeah. But I have to say, this is kind of the working culture in, I don't know other field, in my field, it's kind of a habit or cultures that people working in this kind of style.
My thanks to Vicky for speaking with me on this episode. Thanks also to Lighthouse and the British Council for making it possible. There'll be links to everything we talked about in the show notes for this episode, which you can find in your podcast player or on the website. To subscribe, search for Looking Sideways in your podcast app, or just visit lookingsideways.net. I hope you'll join me for another Shenzhen story soon.